It is now 10:01 a.m. and the Private Activity Bond Committee meeting of October 19th, 2022 is called to order. With me here, I'd like to take a roll call. I am Jacqueline Knights, the Director of the Debt Management Division of Oregon State Treasury and the Treasurer's Designee and Chair of the PAB Committee. Roll call here. Other members, please announce yourself. Teresa.
Good morning, Teresa Diebel, public member.
Renee Klein, designee from the Department of Administrative Services.
I'd like to remind everyone that this meeting is being recorded, and the results of the meeting will be transcribed and made available on the public site. If there's anyone with open mics, we would ask you to close them unless you are speaking. So with all committee members, you should have received an agenda with the meeting materials for the topics being covered today. And these topics include an update of the private activity bond status and presentations from Oregon Housing and Community Services Department and Oregon Business Development Department. There are no requests today for private activity bond volume cap, so we will just have the presentations. Prior to the status update, I would just like to make a few comments. I got a feeling this is going to be a short meeting. This is the final meeting of the PAB committee for the calendar year 2022. This year, we added two new committee members, Renee Klein and Teresa DeBell, who replaced Jean Gabriel and Dan Anderson. I would like to commend the PAB committee members, current and past, for their work, sound judgment, and commitment to being good stewards of the state's resources. This year, there was more competition and utilization of the private activity bond volume cap than prior years. This is due to the desire of local governments and the state to address the pressing need for affordable housing statewide. We commenced the year with $364 million of 2021 carry forward that was allocated in January 2022. In addition, the committee had $176.1 million of 2022 PAB volume cap to allocate. I am pleased that all prior year carry forwards have been fully used. Further, the committee has allocated $173.25 million, or 98.4% of its 2022 PAB volume cap authority. In the aggregate, $537.4 million has been put to use in 2022. The PAB volume cap awarded in 2022, including 2021 carry forwards, was used to fund 29 affordable housing projects statewide, including projects managed by Central Oregon Housing Authority, Home Forward, Housing Authority of Washington County, and a plethora of projects statewide completed through Oregon Housing and Community Services Department. I present this information to say that the committee, in my opinion, has met to the extent of its PAB authorization capacity this formidable task of allocating this scarce resources in an equitable fashion, awarding volume cap to meet the needs of the requesters, responding to additional requests to ensure completion of projects in an inflationary environment. Committee members have exercised sound judgment of the committee's resources to minimize any adverse impact on any agency or requesters who have come before the committee. The high utilization of the PAB volume cap resource is evident by the committee's stewardship of this valuable resource. So with that, I just want to just say this has been a tough year, but a good year, because the outcome is good. And so I want to applaud the members of the committee for this work, and also the requesters who are actually doing the work and putting the projects in place. We're all working together to meet the needs of the state. And I invite any committee members to make any additional comments before we get into the private activity bond status. Renee?
Thank you. This was my first year on the committee. So Jacqueline and Renee, thank you so much for your support and getting me up to speed. And thank you to all the presenters that we had come forward and, you know, giving us great information and answering all the questions that I had and that I think that the committee had. So just happy to be part of the committee and look forward to next year.
Teresa?
Very similar comments. I really appreciate the support we've received onboarding new members like myself and all the work of the folks across the state who have been bringing forward requests and doing the work to utilize the private activity bonds. So thank you.
All right, thank you. With that, I'll turn it over to Anae Hausner from Oregon State Treasury Debt Management Division to discuss the status of the private activity bond allocations in 2022 projects.
Thank you, Mrs. Knight. I appreciate you handing this over to me. So as Chair has stated, private activity bond carry forward allocation history for 2021 has been fully utilized, as you can see here. Most recently, Housing Authority of Washington County for their Goldcrest Apartments project utilized the full $18 million on September 29, 2022. And Oregon Housing and Community Services Department from March 3rd of 2022 through September 15th of 2022 was able to use the full amount of $294,872,256.40. So congratulations on being able to handle all those projects. Let's see. On the private activity bond volume cap, from the July date allocation of 7/20 of 2022, Housing Authority of Washington County requests an additional $2,175,000 for the Goldcrest Apartments, which was utilized on September 29, 2022. And Oregon Housing and Community Services Department received an additional allocation of $35 million, which they used with two projects ending in August 31st of 2022. Leaving the PAB a total remaining available to allocate $2,825,000. Oops, sorry about that. Legislation, Oregon Business Department Commission still has the $40 million that they were allocated by legislation. Oregon Housing and Community Services Department just started using their $250 million allocation. And the Oregon Business Development Department for their farm loan program still has $1 million left for utilization. And as far as the 2022 allocations, as you can see, here's the updated information for what happened in July. And the amounts that the committee available is $176,077,050. We have currently approved $173,252,050, potential remaining allocation of $2,825,000.
And then may I ask a question here?
Sure. Yes.
I see some of the lines are in italics and wondered what the meaning is on those. For example, the farmer loan program.
The italics. It shouldn't be in, that's just a placeholder there. We don't know if that's the exact name. And then some of the dates, these are the forward dates. They're not 100% approved yet. So these are the dates that I get in advanced or the projects that I get in advanced. And then once it becomes that's what happened, then I turn it back to normal.
Thank you.
No problem. And that's where I'm at.
Okay. Any additional questions on the PAB status? All right. Well, thank you. Now we'll turn it over to the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department. I believe Matthew Harris is representing, or is it Amy or Natasha?
It's one of us, yes. Thank
you. Okay, well, I will turn it over to you and you can announce who will be presenting for the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Chair Knights and committee. Can I share my screen to share the PowerPoint, or it's also in the packet?
I'm coming off right now. Give me 1 second. There you go.
Now I should be able to share. Great. Well, thank you, committee. I am Natasha Detweiler-Davey from Oregon Housing and Community Services. So thank you for allowing us to come forward here today. So I am, there, now I can see you as well as the presentation. So I think we, you know, are not here today to request resources. We're just wanting to provide some information and an update and follow up on our efforts around affordable rental housing funding and OHCS efforts broadly. As Anae just covered, for our resources, we have deployed $529.2 million in private activity bonds as of last week to fund 2,369 units and 32 projects. This has been a tremendous volume of work for everyone involved, including across the state enterprise and across the state with our development partners. We do have $173.1 million in private activity bonds remaining. So this is our pipeline anticipated. You can see on the graph is the purple there at the top. And so these are the projects that we have still in our queue with anticipated closings through the rest of the year. And we do see that we have resources to cover those projects as well as cost increases. And I'll talk in a second about some of the drivers of those increases that we are continuing to see and have projects struggle with. We did want to flag that these are projects, you know, as we are moving forward and recasting our process, are really placing a really robust lens on readiness to proceed, seeing that we have a constricted resource and want to make sure that we're providing these commitments to projects that are able to move forward in now versus hold on to them as commitments over a longer period of time. But this is the kind of pipeline that existed before that all had come into play. And so we are, you know, continuing to work with sponsors and see that there are some potential risks that there might be some slippage of these projects to move into 23, which doesn't mean that those resources aren't needed and won't still fund these projects, but just flagging that there's a potential that we'll be kind of returning some of these current year resources in the hopes of receiving them back as carried forward. We are also, as I said, working through our recasted process and just some graphics to show the skewed nature of the demand that we continue to see for private activity bonds. This is driven largely through state investment in gap funding through our LIFT and the PSH efforts, but also the Metro and Portland bond resources that are providing that needed leverage of gap funding to go with 4% to be deployed into community. And so as we are looking forward, we are doing several things. First, I was just talking about the how we are trying to maximize the impact and the reach of private activity bonds to make sure that we are using them only in and as required. And so that maybe Matthew could speak a little bit to the single family bond program use of resources for OHCS.
Yeah, thanks, Natasha. Matthew Harris with Oregon Housing. Hey, so we are about to close a single family bond transaction next week. We utilized a large portion of that through variable rate financing that we're going to do a swap on, but roughly $15 million will be used to preserve basically recycled PAB volume cap. So essentially, we've shifted our single family program. You know, I know a lot of folks are aware of what we do as single family, but we're issuing bonds to purchase loans for first-time homebuyers or Oregonians to allow them to borrow at a lower than market rate. And so when we received those prepayments, we had issued a number of tax-exempt bonds over the years. And so those prepayments are restricted in what we can do with them. Typically, what we've done is we've taken prepayments, wrapped them up, and done what's called a replacement refunding to essentially do a new bond issue to, we utilize the prepayments to pay off the old bonds, issue new bonds, and it was kind of neutral from a tax perspective. We didn't have to use volume cap. And we're switching to a direct recycling where because the older bonds are at much lower rates than new bonds we could issue today, as everyone's aware, interest rates have risen considerably. We're going to turn around and just make new purchases with our prepayments, except for some are restricted through federal tax law. There's a 10-year rule for prepayments. I can't remember if it's before or after those mortgages have been outstanding for 10 years. Jacqueline, Chair Knights, you might have a better understanding of the specific tax implications than us. But essentially, we would lose that PAB if we didn't do a replacement refunding. So with the help of Treasury, we have put together kind of a strategy to preserve that for the next year. We're issuing a one-year bond, and then in 6 months, we'll also issue another six-month bond to just kind of keep that allocation, if you will, outstanding. It doesn't utilize formally PAB authority, but it because of the way the tax law works, it just means that we don't have to ask for PAB to be able to do tax exempt financing for those bonds. And if we're going to hopefully save up authority of about 50 to 60 million so we can continue to finance the single family program on a tax exempt basis and not come back and ask for additional volume cap for that program for the next year. So just trying to share that we're employing, you know, with the help of Treasury, every possible strategy we can to try to maximize our use of this resource, because we know it's in demand. So thank you. I'll turn it back to Natasha.
Thank you, Matthew. So robust efforts on the single family program side, and on the multifamily affordable rental housing side, also trying to do what we can to make sure that we are trying to kind of skew those graphs back so that we can try to meet more of the demand with the resources that we do have in hand. And to that end, agreement from our Housing Stability Council, we have pulled a year of our 9% tax credit allocation to be able to be used to fund projects that had been put forward as 4% transactions. And the distinction between the 4% credit and the 9% credit is that the 9% credit does not require that half of the resources be funded, half of the costs be funded with private activity bonds. And so that's a way of essentially taking some of those projects that demand out of our queue to be able to swap that out. And so that is the first time we've endeavored upon that. We do have the applications for those resource asks in-house, and so we're evaluating program fit and impact to that private activity bond pipeline to hope to be making decisions here soon. And I have a timeline slide. We have also, with our Housing Stability Council in partnership with Metro, essentially forward allocated some of our gap financing to be able to be paired with those Metro bond and Portland bond funded projects in the hopes that it reduces reliance on PAB, also will help with some of the cost escalation factors as well. And we are also looking into recycling short-term PAB use for projects. And they're in particular for, so the idea is to take where you've issued the bonds as short-term, be able to recycle it again to be able to issue another loan on that. It does not generate a 4% tax credit on the recycle, but it does carry benefits in terms of funding projects with those with the tax exempt rates. So we're looking to kind of do all of those, move all of those levers forward with the idea of setting up a system that is effectively and maximizing and prioritizing the use of private activity bond authority. And I referenced that we've worked through some process updates for our 4% program with a really clear, deliberate lens on readiness to proceed and performance. So as we had frozen our application process, which had previously been first, you know, open, non-competitive, first come, first serve, we are have pivoted that into a competitive structure with a deliberate focus on readiness to proceed. As I said, projects that can go forward, if they have the resources, they can show us that they can do it now. And then performance against readiness benchmarks that we would be holding projects accountable to. We have updated our programmatic policies. 4% tax credits by themselves used to have a carry with a 30-year affordability period. We are now updating that to be 60 years, which is in line with our bulk of our competitive programs. And we have increased thresholds for cultural responsiveness that's beyond the kind of the basic affirmative marketing that had previously been part of that 4% program. So really trying to bring this into a place of if you're competing for these resources, we are able to get more from those policy, the policy side of deliverables. So moving forward, we have created two set asides. So 65% attributed to Metro. This is historically where the bulk of private activity bonds and 4% transactions have been. We've expanded over the years our ability to use 4% in the balance of state, including rural communities, thanks in large part, or really in whole, to the creation of a LIFT program that provides that paired investment that has worked in rural communities. So surely continuing to retain resources to prioritize investments in rural communities, but also being effective partners in the metro communities. We have worked in concert with our housing authority projects, housing authority partners. So gratitude to the housing authorities of Oregon and have worked to create with them a structure where we will be presenting to private activity bond committee a shared pipeline so that we are in collaboration making decisions about investment priorities and aren't requiring the private activity bond committee to make those tough decisions. So we'll be partnering with them. In our priority, we are prioritizing projects that are owned by housing authorities. And then in second place, then projects that have significant local funds, and that would include Metro Bond and Portland Bond funded projects and others that other community resources. And then we have projects with OHCS or other federal funding. And then as resources remain, come the day there will be resources remaining, would prioritize those projects that don't have another subsidy source to them. And then within all of that, you know, it's a bunch of layers of priorities, but we are also, you know, as we have oversubscribed buckets or asks for resources, would first be giving first priority to projects that have a culturally specific partner sponsor, as well as in second priority, those that have the higher percentage of units that can serve extremely low income households, knowing that that's where there is a significant a gap in housing availability to serve those 0 to 30% households. And then third would be continued to be oversubscribed within that bucket, then you would be able to, we would be prioritizing which of those projects include a permanent supportive housing focus, which would include rent assistance and supportive services resources to fund housing stability for those tenants. I mentioned earlier there are continuing to have some volatility in our kind of cost market for housing in our pipeline, and this is been, I guess, a consistent theme across the past couple years and a little bit of a moving target as to the driver. And I think there are really three main categories of this cost volatility. The first, of course, being labor market. And this is going to continue to be a concern where we see that there will be both cost increases associated with the labor, but also difficulty securing a workforce to actually do the construction. We then also are seeing, as I'm sure this group is well aware, an inflationary market where interest rates have begun to increase such that debt is now higher cost. And when that happens, a project is unable to take on as much debt as they maybe had it initially anticipated at a lower interest rate, which then creates that funding gap. And then third is the cost volatility. And this has been a certain moving target, supply chain issues inclusive, but we're continuing to see that there's volatility in this, which has reduce the predictability. When we have funding processes that have projects submitting initial applications, assuming costs a year or more ahead of the actual construction, that exacerbates the ability for these to be really disconnected. As we've moved forward, we're trying to place a really concerted and clear lens for partners to understand that all of these volatilities are what they need to build into their pro forma and their modeling of costs. And so we're including the ability to have, to include inflationary factors and assumptions that give enough cushion to make sure that when they come to the time of project closing and financing, that they do not end up with a surprise gap that they're unable to cover. The state has invested in the 2022 legislative session $50 million through OHCS to commit to projects to resolve funding gaps, as we had in our pipeline of projects where they had been put forward at a time where those assumptions weren't already understood. And we've fully committed those resources. We're continuing to do what we can to make sure projects are moving forward. And there's going to be a time when I think we're kind of reaching that point when we're not going to continue to have resources to rescue projects. And that's where we need to make sure that we are being clear around readiness to proceed and making sure that there's these clear understanding that those assumptions need to be built in to the initial applications. And so this is really just a overview of kind of high level timeline of where we are. We have, again, we paused the program and late last year, about a year ago. We have reopened it. We have applications submitted into OHCS. We are working on revising our qualified allocation plan, which is the document that guides our low-income housing tax credit programs to incorporate all of these revisions that Housing Stability Council has supported, and so that those are in place and formal by the new year, and will be, and this kind of walks through the process of pulling those 9% and the impact to other offerings. But we are right now prioritizing in terms of building our queue of projects for 2023, those projects that can close in the first 6 months of 2023. So saying that's our first cut is those projects that say, I have everything in line. If you give me the resources, I have everything lined up to be able to move to that closing date. And then we'll end up making those reservations contingent on resources being available. And as if we, have projects fall out or not meet readiness benchmarks, they'll have to re-enter the queue and we'll be able to redistribute those resources to make sure that they can be all deployed successfully next year. And so I think with that, that's really all we had to share today. I'm happy to take any questions and otherwise just would express gratitude for the committee and the rigor around this resource. Obviously, it's a tremendously valuable resource for both our single family bond program as well as our 4% tax credit program, where it's has the added benefit of generating that low-income housing tax credit and bringing in equity investment to the state.
Thank you, Natasha and Matthew. Committee members, are there any questions related to this presentation? Teresa? Renee? I would like to invite any public comments or questions at this time. Anae, if you see any public members who are looking to ask questions, please identify them.
I don't see any as of yet.
I do have one question on the materials presented. In the Appendix B to the materials submitted to the committee, it looks like for 2022, there will be an excess of $64 million of PAB volume cap that OHCS has that will remain unutilized. Is that correct for the 2022?
Yeah, Jacqueline, I can take that one. We had a rather large project bump into January, I believe, of 2023, which increased the amount that we'll have outstanding at the end of this year. So we'll be coming back at the carry forward meeting to request that allocation. As we get towards the end of the year, we've had a couple of projects that are slowly slipping into, you know, November, December, and a couple have bounced into January already. So that number may increase just a little bit more potentially. I think there's one other project that's got a December close that we're concerned may not be able to meet that deadline, but they will, you know, again, come in January. So it's not that that won't be utilized. It's just that some projects are starting to fall into the next calendar year.
Okay, great. So you've answered my other follow-up questions as well. Okay, great. Thank you. Any additional questions, committee members or the public? I want to say that from Treasury, we do support the Housing Authority, the Housing and Community Services Department, and we're familiar with their work. It's extraordinary work. It's a lot of work. And we see the many projects going through the pipeline. So again, want to applaud you for the work that you do in advancing the state's mandate to improve the amount or to expand the amount of housing, affordable and permanent housing for people in need. So I do think that the priorities that you have outlined are great and do appreciate your thoughtfulness in outlining these procedures for prioritizing projects and the collaboration that you are doing with the housing authority, the local housing authorities. So that makes the work of the committee a little easier. So thank you for that effort. With that, we will turn it over to Oregon Business Development Department. We'll be making a presentation as well.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Hi, this is Neil Fitzgerald. I'm a business finance officer with Business Oregon. John Saris is the finance manager. He was on his way to Eugene today and got stuck in a terrific traffic jam, so he's not going to be able to do the presentation. If I'm not looking at the camera, it's because I wasn't anticipating presenting today, so I'm going to be going a little bit by notes, but I'm not ignoring the camera. I'm just trying to follow, make sure what I'm saying makes sense. So my intent today is just to review our industrial development bond. We have $40 million allocation typically annually. That's what we received in 2022. In 2022, we received two applications. The combined use of those was $8 million for Beaverton Foods for a manufacturing facility in Beaverton. That was under the Express Bond Program. The other $32 million was for an exempt facility to a public-private partnership with between Lake Oswego and EPCOR to construct an exempt facility, which was a wastewater treatment facility. Both of those were approved by the Business Finance Committee in 2022. The Beaverton Foods project, which was approved in about April, was put on hold by the company, which resulted in the balance of that $8 million balance being put back into the mix as for eligible projects. The Business Oregon elected to reassign that allocation internally of the agency allocation to the EPCOR project. So the $40 million was awarded to EPCOR. The EPCOR project is a P3 partnership between EPCOR, the City of Lake Oswego, and the City of Portland to construct a new sewage and water treatment facility. Total project costs are about $180 million. The facility qualifies as an exempt facility under the IRS rules, and it will allow the city to accelerate compliance with more stringent national pollutant discharge elimination system permit requirements, and it will enhance the water quality in the Willamette River Basin. The project will also promote energy efficiency and climate resiliency. The EPCOR and the City of Lake Oswego are still working through their public approval process, which is now estimated to be concluded in December. The City of Lake Oswego is negotiating the acquisition of the land that the facility will be constructed on and has shared that they expect that to be completed around April of 2023. EPCOR remains confident that the City of Lake Oswego will approve the treatment facility and the P3 arrangement later this year, and has included the financial benefits of the IDB financing in its cost and cash flow models being considered by the City of Lake Oswego. Business Oregon will most likely be returning its $40 million allocation of volume cap in December to be pooled with any other outstanding 2022 volume cap for carry forward allocation in 2023. After providing a brief update on the pipeline of activity for 2023, I'll circle back to the plans that Business Oregon has been discussing with EPCOR to continue to support their project. Turning to 2023 volume cap, the agency, and this I'm talking about the agency volume cap of $40 million. Business Oregon received an application from IMEAM, an exempt facility that will be producing biochar and will be exporting their products internationally. This is for 2023. The project is located in Millersburg and proposes to create 40 or more jobs above the average medium wage for the county. In August of this year, the Finance Committee approved the project for up to $40 million of 2023 volume cap, and this project is on track to close in early 2023. Which will use the entire department allocation. At our last Finance Committee meeting, there was a discussion about establishing preferences for volume cap as we continue to move forward with the unprecedented demand to support affordable housing needs across the state. Staff at OBDD will be developing preferences and working with the Finance Committee to publish those in early 2023. Preferences for meaning for allocations that we'll be receiving in the next year. We're looking to focus on projects that provide wages at or above the median statewide income, are located or draw their workforce from rural communities, and are engaged in one of Oregon's key industries, such as metals manufacturing, high technology, forest and wood products, food and beverages, and outdoor gear and apparel. Circling back to EPCOR, as Business Oregon will be returning volume cap it anticipated using in 2022 two for the EPCOR project. EPCOR and Business Oregon will be submitting an application to PABC in January for volume cap to support the project in 2023. The request will likely see current year PAB volume cap to preserve carry forward for housing projects. And in the likely event that the EPCOR project does not go through, the volume cap can be returned to PABC for other projects in 2023. Again, we think that's unlikely. We really think the project's going forward probably in the first half of 2023. Looking at 2024 volume cap, with the rising interest rates, we're seeing a lot more demand from companies seeking volume cap, even 2 to 3 years out. The IDB funding is a tremendous benefit to manufacturers. Just 2 to 3 years ago, due to low cost of private capital, unless a project was 8 to 10 million minimum, the benefit of this funding was less significant. There are 3 to 4 projects across the state that are already considering applications for 2024 volume cap, but many of those projects will need to remain on hold until there is a better understanding of what the volume cap allocations may look like after the next session. So essentially, just to recap a bit, we had 2 applications for current year agency volume cap. One of the projects was withdrawn. The other project is still actively being pursued, due to the timing of when the approvals will come forward from the municipality involved, it's most likely that that's not going to be closing in by December 15th. So we'll be returning our agency volume cap to PABC in December. And we'll be coming back in 2024, the January session, requesting current year PABC volume cap for the EPCOR project, remaining at the same level of $40 million. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Neil. Just to clarify, for the EPCOR project, you're coming back in 2023 to yes. request $40 million of 2023 volume cap for right. the EPCOR project. Okay.
Yes. If I said 2024, sorry.
Just want to make sure for the record, I understood, but wanted the record to reflect that your plan is to come in January to request $40 million for that project. And you are expecting to allocate what is legislatively allocated to Oregon Business Development, the $40 million to the AMIM, and excuse me if I don't pronounce that correctly. Yes. I've been struggling with how to pronounce the AMIM project from what you have in your toolbox, so to speak.
Right. Our finance committee actually approved the initial resolution for that in August.
Okay.
And that would be our 2024 allocation.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any questions?
2023, excuse me.
Okay. Any questions from Renee? Any questions from you?
No questions from me.
Teresa?
No, Chair Knights.
Okay. We'll open it up now to the public for any questions or comments. Please raise your hand in the chat in the reactions button if you have any questions.
I don't see any, Chair Knights.
Okay. I don't have any additional questions. Thank you, Neil, for sitting in for John Saris. I was going to say John Saris is presenting, so I'm happy that you stepped forward very quickly to announce yourself.
Well, thank you very much.
Nice to meet you. Okay, so seeing that we have no comments from the public, I guess I wanted to comment on the 2023 schedule and how we will conduct the meetings. We are expected to remain in a hybrid work format. The Oregon State Treasury offices are open. The meetings will be available on Teams, even if members of the committee are present within Oregon State Treasury. We will notify any participant if they want to come into Treasury at the location of the Treasury, but it will also be maintained on Teams so we can maximize the public participation in the meetings. That flexibility exists, and that's what we'll be utilizing for 2023. Anae, do you have a calendar for our January and upcoming meetings in 2023?
That is slated to be put out on Friday. So the little calendar, I could probably get it out later today.
Okay, so it's our anticipation that the first meeting in accordance with our plans would be for Wednesday, January 18th, 2023. And so we will put that on the calendar and continue that cycle. So that's yes. It, and we'll publish it on the website. Mm-hmm. Anae, is that correct?
Okay.
Again, any questions, comments from committee members? The public? Okay, it is now 10:48. I will entertain a motion to adjourn this meeting.
I move that we adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.
I second the motion to adjourn the meeting.
Okay, this meeting is formally adjourned, and Anae, you may cease the operation. Thank you all very much. Thank you for your service. Have a great day.